I'm speaking with Diana Sheets of literarygulag.com and author of Decoding Our Candidates. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you for taking the time for the interview.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Could you give our listeners some background about yourself and your writing?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Let's see, I grew up in the Mystic, Connecticut area, so I'm, you know, long-time Connecticut resident, and I actually go back during the summers and over the December break. I did my undergraduate at University of Colorado and did some graduate studies at Princeton University, and I was director of their Women's Center, and then went on to get my master's and PhD in politics, actually in history, modern European history, but my minor area of emphasis was literature and politics. And after getting my doctorate, I worked in the corporate world for about 12 years. Then I had an opportunity to relocate to the Midwest, and I became a research scholar in the English and history departments, and I've been working on fiction. I've written two novels, but because of the difficulty of the marketplace and selling what I think is interesting and challenging fiction, I decided that I would have to launch my blog, which is called Literary Gulag, and it's a series of essays of literary criticism and political commentary.
Could you explain what you describe in your writing as narratives the candidates use and give us a brief overview of the current candidates' narratives?
Sure. I think what I was looking at this election and I was trying to understand what really are the driving forces. And there are actually two books out in the marketplace that explain it very well, George Lakoff's Moral Politics and Drew Weston's The Political Brain. And if you look at the election, you realize that the voters are emotional. They vote not for rational reasons, but for emotional factors. And what influences voters and shapes their decision to vote are linguistic influences. The words that the candidates choose to define their moral worldviews. What's interesting about the 2008 presidential election is it is fueled by narrative. That is, the personal stories of the candidates really have been almost discussed relentlessly. Then it behooves us to analyze why are they using these stories and what do they indicate about the candidates and possibly about how they might govern.
Would you say that there is a relation between the desensitization of generations of Americans and the relation with the desire for relating to the candidates on a personal level rather than policy level?
Yes, I would agree with that. We're reading less as a culture, and we're less analytic. Everything today is being driven by confession. So fiction has disappeared, and memoirs are the only thing selling, and so now publishers are selling the memoirs of presidential candidates. We're starved for celebrity, and we're starved for personal information about how people live. And we really are much less interested in more abstract ideas about policies that are going to influence how an individual might govern the nation. And I think that's actually a tragedy.
There are 12 candidates running, and many of them are campaigning on policy, not stories. What is the media's role in impacting this shift from policy to stories?
Well, the media, to some degree, is looking for what is going to drive viewership. And what's going to drive viewership are things that are stories, emotional stories that are going to sway viewers to listen and tune in. And unfortunately, what bores people is very dry examinations of policies and legislative reforms with all the details. They want to know what is the emotional heartbeat of the candidate. And so the news media is really responding to what they can see in their own analysis of who tunes in and how long they stay on. And so that's why they're focusing on personal narratives.
Now, when did these narratives start becoming significant in presidential elections?
Well, if you look at, for instance, McCain and Obama, I mean, they've written, each of them, two books. The first book of each of them are their autobiographical stories. John McCain's is Faith of My Father, and Barack Obama's is Dreams from My Father. And they have subsequent books that really try to have a vague discussion of policy and where they're going to go with these worldviews. But both of these narratives have been really the founding orientation of their political campaigns, and they reflect their worldviews. So I'll give you just an example. In McCain's Faith of My Fathers, he was the third generation of a naval officer. His father was they lived for a while in the Groton, the London area, because his father was a submariner, and both his grandfather and father were admirals. And John McCain's worldview is defined by faith, by a really dedication to his country, by seeing a cause larger than self, by the necessity of rising to serve a nation. Now, if you look at Barack Obama's Dreams of My Father, it's really much more attuned, I would argue, to a younger generation. I think younger people have a hard time understanding or relating to a decision to go to war and fight and being a prisoner of war for 5.5 years, which was John McCain's experience. With Barack Obama, what they're seeing is a young man who has a search for his identity. And I think that's something that emotionally resonates with many young people is, who am I? Who am I going to become? So in the case of Barack Obama, it's a search for his racial and personal identity. And it's a very powerful book, Dreams from My Father. It's a very emotionally engaging, and I think he's very effective in using literary techniques to win his audience. But essentially a subjective account of what he's thinking and feeling rather than an objective, an examination of what his life was really all about. And so that makes it, from my perspective, a little bit suspect. And I wish, therefore, that both candidates would be focusing more on the issues, which they are now doing in the debate.
Would you consider these stories that they are using to be more like a parable to relate policy with practice, or more of a mask to sort of hide behind and water down the campaign with?
Well, I think John McCain's is a parable. I think it's sort of a life lesson of how you can conduct your life in service to a nation. I think Barack Obama's is really, really hiding behind. It's very hard to get to the true sense of what his life was actually like. And it's really interesting. If you look at Jerome Corsi's Obamanation, and people may not agree with his political orientation, but what he's done is systematically examine the fallacies of Barack Obama's Dreams from My Father, and he separated what has actually happened from the emotional perception of how Barack Obama lived his life, and it's really quite revealing.
Would you like to talk a little bit more about your book and your writing in general as far as where people might be able to find it?
Yes. If you go on the Internet and look under www.literarygulag.com, you'll find my website. That's www.literarygulag.com. Or you can look in the web, you can search me under Diana Sheets, and that's S-H-E-E-T-S, and you'll find the website. I write one essay a month, and I've written a number of essays on literary criticism and why literature has died and what we need to do to really revitalize meaningful fiction engaged with the world. One of the attractions in looking at this presidential election is some of the same problems that have created the death of fiction, namely what I would call a solipsistic internal look at consciousness, has really, in my opinion, destroyed fiction. Fiction is no longer engaged with the world. It's no longer looking at anything that's uncomfortable about the world. So there are a lot of connections, in my opinion, between literary criticism and what's happening in fiction today and how the presidential campaigns are being run. They're being run on narratives that are remarkably like what people are going to, either for memoir or fiction.
It says on the press release I got that you could provide a little literary commentary on the vice presidential debates.
Yes, the next essay that I'm going to be writing, which hopefully will be fairly soon, I want to do it over the next 2 weeks, is going to be looking at the recent debate that occurred between Sarah Palin and Joe Biden. And it's really fascinating because it really distills down to a nutshell the fundamentally different worldviews of the candidates. So I'll just, if it's all right, Alex, I'll just give you a short synopsis of some of these different worldviews.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. So Sarah Palin, she's talking about the economic crisis that we're currently facing, and she's saying the reasons that have caused it are no oversight, but the emphasis has really been on the predatory lenders of Wall Street. Now, if you contrast that with Joe Biden's perspective, and keep in mind their perspectives reflect their parties and are indicative of the presidential candidates, Joe Biden is talking about the excessive deregulation and the greed of Wall Street. So you have two fundamentally different worldviews. You have a worldview of a strong father, an independent person navigating the world. That's the Sarah Palin view. She's actually representing what I would call the male perspective. And you have Joe Biden, who's representing what I would call a feminized perspective, which is a perspective that is engaged with taking care of its citizenry. You don't have, you know, the society will care for you.
Yeah.
So Sarah Palin is, you know, talking about John McCain, the maverick, and Joe Biden is talking about Obama's change campaign. Palin's talking about the problems of, well, she's criticizing the Obama administration's plan to tax individuals earning over $250,000 and businesses that are in that category. And Joe Biden or Obama's campaign is talking about the need to tax wealthy individuals to help those who are who have less and need assistance. And particularly, the worldviews were really especially indicated when they talked about the what has happened in this current financial crisis. Sarah Palin's recognizing that people need to take personal responsibility, not to live outside their means, and never to be taken advantage of again. And Joe Biden, representing the Obama worldview, is talking about fairness and the need to help victims. And in terms of oil policy, you have, you know, you have Sarah Palin talking about drill, baby, drill, and you have the Obama-Biden camp talking about alternative energy and environmental concerns. So you have, in almost any area they care to discuss, you have fundamentally different worldviews, that of what George Lakoff would call a strict parent perspective, which is represented by the Republicans and Sarah Palin, and that of a nurturing parent perspective, which is represented by the Democrats and Joe Biden. So it's been a fascinating campaign simply because these worldviews have been very starkly represented, and the voters are being asked to pick emotionally the side that best reflects their worldview.
The candidates this election have very similar policies as far as government goes. Do you think that they're pushing the narratives to make the candidates seem more different than they actually are?
Well, Alex, I actually disagree. I think they have strikingly different. What has united them is this economic crisis and the bailout they've been agreed on. And what is interesting to me is because of the financial constraints imposed by the economic bailout, I don't know how much freedom the candidates will have to actually pursue their very, very different worldviews. But I actually think that the narratives, their personal stories, reflect these very, very, very different worldviews. If you look at the John McCain narrative, it's about an individual who has who goes out and goes out to war and fights and then is a prisoner of war, and how he gained courage by looking at fellow prisoner of war POWs and how this changed his worldview. In the case of Obama, you have really someone who is in some sense a citizen of the world and really was searching for who he was. So his was a very personal story, a personal narrative, and it really reflects the social policies. What he did was decide that his social goals would be improving the nation and improving fairness. So on the one hand, you have Obama's policy, which is a fairly traditional Democratic policy of social fairness and justice and helping those who are less fortunate. And then you have the John McCain scenario, which is a strong foreign policy and a minimum of governmental legislation to interfere in the lives of the individuals. To me, these are two very, very different worldviews. And I think they're reflected in their personal stories and actually in their campaign objectives.
Do you think any of the third-party candidates would have the same sort of media and support if they were to turn to these narrative campaigns rather than policy campaigns?
I think the way that our voting system is set up really discourages third-party candidates, and it's made it almost impossible for them to succeed. Once in a while, you'll get an alternative, for instance, in Connecticut with Joe Lieberman when he ran as an independent and won. But by and large, and there's a, to some degree in Connecticut has this exception, because even Lowell Weicker, as a Republican, took a stand against Vietnam. And so, again, he was more of a maverick than is traditional in Republican circles. So I sort of see Connecticut as somewhat different than the national perspective. But overall, I really think that it becomes almost impossible to get the electoral vote as a third-party candidate. And having a compelling narrative is not going to work unless you are very early in the primary process able to engage the voters, and they somehow become so disenchanted with both the Republican and Democratic parties that they aggressively seek the third-party candidate, even though they had narratives that, in theory, should have been compelling. Now, my understanding is if you look at Israel, for instance, their system of government strongly encourages proportional representation, and so you get many, many different candidates competing, and they're actually emphasized, and it makes it very difficult to govern. So, I mean, that would be a very, very different perspective that would allow for third-party candidates with differing narratives to get a lot of attention. But our process seems to really make it very, very difficult for an independent candidate.
That's all the questions I had for today. Again, we've been listening to Diana Sheets of LiteraryGulag.com. Thank you for the time, and thank you for all the information.
Well, thank you, Alex, and I want to thank your listeners, and maybe we'll have an opportunity to do this again.